The Fox's Book of Martyrs is a collection of the martyrdoms in the early church, very early church, all the way through the Inquisition and through the martyrdoms of the during the Protestant Reformation. Fox was a scholar, intellectual type during the 1500s. And he grew up right around Stratford-on-the-Avon, where Shakespeare was from, and he just was just previous to Shakespeare, and he was contemporary with Luther, and all of the politicizing of religion that took place was like crystallized in his life. This was a period in religious history that was almost like no other, except for the beginning of the church. It's when the Inquisitions were taking on, when the Knights Templar were still in power, when the wars between the popes and the Protestants and the Anglican Church hadn't split yet. And it was a wild, wild active time of the church. And he, depending on which king was in power, whether the king favored the Pope or not, and then Fox was a prominent figure, and eventually he was really put in prison and badly mistreated. Anyway, he chronicles and researches, it took him 11 years to write this, of constant research, and he chronicles all of the martyrs that throughout the church history, from the beginning all the way through, and names them, and from the best evidence available describes how they died and where they died and the circumstances. In many cases has the legal trial documents. Anyway, it again overwhelmed me about how much we take for granted and how much that these men and women of God paid for so that we could study freely. It cost them their life to do what we do. The one that sticks in my mind is Ignatius, who was prominent in the early church, and he was arrested in one of the provinces. He was the bishop at Antioch after Peter, and he was arrested at Antioch and carried to Rome by the Roman soldiers. And as he went, he was greeted by throngs of believers who just went crazy when they saw him. The idea that this pillar of their faith was about to be killed. When he got to Rome, and he did incredible messages and encouragement to each of the churches, and a lot of these letters and the speeches that he made are still extant. They're not in Fox's Book of Martyrs, they're in another source. But anyway, the thing that he's most famous for is his refusal to recant. The prosecutor wanted him to just give a teeny little bit so they'd have an excuse to set him free, because he really didn't want to. And he couldn't. He didn't. And he kept pushing the envelope, so to speak. And finally, while he was being led to the lions, his prayer was recorded by the Roman soldier that was holding him, who later became a leader of the church. But the Roman soldiers, the prayer was, "Father, let these lions be the mill that grinds me as wheat, that I might be a pure sacrifice." And I was thinking about how our cheap grace and our ridiculous little trips and philosophies in the face of what these men and women did so that we could be here. Unbelievable. One of the emperors took anyone that named the name of Christ, and they impaled them, but not to death, they affixed them to a pole and dipped them in wax, and so they became the living candles for his parties. Others, they sewed them inside of animal skins and let the wolves tear them. Others, it happened quite often, the death of Paul, where that Paul spoke of, where they were chained to a dead body, face to face, and just left to lie on the ground. And let, as that dead body deteriorated, maggots became, they would crawl, they would become part, so that there was no... But what men and women did that we might study this is awesome. And what men and women did, I was thinking about trying to, you know, what would modern theology have to say? You know, can you imagine these guys being concerned whether or not something's going on in Israel or not, or whether or not
successful,
you know, whether or not they could gain something from being. Their prayer was to be sifted as wheat, to be milled as wheat, that they might be the acceptable offering unto the Father. I mean, can you touch, can I, in talking about this, can I give you some sense of what reality is about? Not this garbage that's life. This went on for centuries. There were periods of respite, during different emperors who, for one reason or another, but it's very difficult reading this book. But if I would highly recommend you read it. It chronicles point by point every one of the apostles' death, what happened to them, what happened to Timothy, what happened to, where they were, where they went.
Can you get these books in the library?
Oh yeah, Fox's Book of Martyrs. During this time of Reformation and immediately thereafter, was second only to the Bible in worldwide book sales. But again, it influenced generations. It influenced. It had another incredibly hot time in the 1800s when it outsold the Bible in some places. But it's dormant essentially, and the only there's. But it's interesting reading.
Really banging fast, but I don't care. I can hardly even stand here about it. Let alone thinking about being in that situation.
Yeah, but the only thing that you can do is abandon yourself. I mean, you can't dwell on that.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you're cowardice or not, it is immaterial. I say all that to say this. We're about to study Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah are the type of the world that won't listen. As you'll see, they're the... They're who the promise is available to freely without charge, but who... making an instrument of the gratification of the flesh is really what Sodom and Gomorrah are about.
I was thinking about that when last time we studied, and Abraham says, if there's 10 righteous men left, God said, I would not destroy it. I mean, about this world, you know, even if there's just 10, he'll wait, and it makes me think that, you know, the end will come.
Go to Revelation 11, starting verse 4. These are the two olive trees the two candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. And if any man will hurt them, fire proceedeth out of their mouth and devoureth their enemies. And if any man will hurt them, he must in this manner be killed. These have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over waters to turn them into blood, to smite the earth with all plagues, as oft as they will. When they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them, and shall overcome them and kill them. And their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. Now they're talking about Jerusalem. John the Revelator is calling Jerusalem Sodom and Egypt. I hear that. Never forget that. Okay? Now let's go back to Genesis.
You came to me last night complaining about their situation. I was talking to them, and I said, well, I understand what you're saying, because I thought those things, I thought those things. I felt the same unhappiness. I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't amount to anything. And what they said to me was, well, isn't the fact that you feel unhappy, isn't that the first clue to you that there's something wrong, that what's being taught here is not right? And I'm going to recommend to them that book. And I just remember when we turned here in 19, last night I had a dream that it was a dream about that conversation. And after that conversation, I dreamed that I went in and laid down. And as I was laying down, it was like the inside of me was a world. And in that world, or space, or field, or whatever it was a pillar of salt. And it started to rain. And the rain dissolved the pillar of salt. Pillar of salt was this me, this identity or whatever it is. As I could see and I could feel the pillar of salt being dissolved by the rain, and it just, what was in me was just a wonderful feeling of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Chapter 18, verse 32. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. And he said, or the Lord said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. Why 10? What is so mystical about 10?
It's a minion.
Why is that a minion? Why not 2 a minion?
Doesn't work.
What about 3 then, or 4, or 5, or 6, or 7, or 8, or 9? Why is it 9 a minion? Why would he, if he would have found 9, if he would have destroyed it, why would he have destroyed it at 9 and not at 10? Or why would he have destroyed it at 8 and not at 10? Let me try to get this clear to you. Mystically, the number 10 is the number, the minimum number that can eat the Passover lamb and there be nothing left over. Now, why is that important?
Well,
why does God care whether any of the Passover lamb is left over at morning? When they eat the Passover, there can't be anything left over, not the slightest tinsel, not even, everything has to be destroyed. Remember that?
Is it so that from that point on, there's no saving up, the need is met, it's met. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing you can say back and use that.
Yeah, that's part of it. That you can't refrigerate it. Do you know that? Do you know that in all of history, it wasn't until very, very recently that we've had refrigeration? Do you know that refrigeration to God is a heresy? Because refrigeration allows the preservation more than the allotted time of the lamb. You have a feel for what I'm talking about? There was no such thing as perverse preservatives, or MSG wasn't known. Why? Because if a thing was going to rot of itself, it had to rot of itself. Not man interfere chemically to keep it from rotting. Why?
Because it has to be for today.
It has to be for today only. And all of man's propensity is to save. Put up for tomorrow. Now, the mystical number 10 is required because that's the minimum number that can begin the process of spiritual reproduction. I can't tell you. Now it's not, God didn't care about 10 bodies. 10 bodies are, he could raise up stones to make 10 bodies. He cares about 10 people, 10 vessels at rest. If you're not at rest, you might as well be a stone. God can raise up those stones just like that. Turn them into sons of Adam, sons of Abraham even. But from the very beginning, 10 at rest were required for a minyan. Number 10, you know, we talk here about you have to have at least 10, but no more than 20 in order to be a group, a seder. Well, that's the reason, but, I mean, do we have 10 at rest in here? Probably at some point, 10 of you have been at rest sometime. For a brief 10 seconds. At rest without regard to the circumstances that you may find yourself in. It doesn't matter. He's heard all of them. There's no situation, there's no circumstance that you can find yourself in where you have any excuse not to be at rest. What's that? What else happens with 10? With 10, you can't, over a very brief period of time, you can no longer act. Do you know you can act with 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, but with 10, you can't act.
So there's enough diversity that somebody really sniffs. You don't like somebody. You don't like each other. They can cheat, call it out. Oh, with 3, you can pretend to be buddies.
Do you know God hates buddies? Buddies are squat. I mean, they're nothing. Why? Because all it is a bunch of flesh eating. It means nothing in the economy of life. Oh, we're such good friends. No, you're not. You're just chewing on the same flesh. You're not. You don't even know the meaning of friendship. You don't even know the meaning of buddyhood. Oh, we just felt so right. We were just friends from the start. Well, then you weren't friends. Not by God's definition of friendship. God says, in order for you to be a friend, you have to know everything there is about the other person. You have to know everything about his plans and his future and his activities. And you have to agree to abide with him anyway. So that's another thing about 10. 10 destroys buddydom. What else does 10 do? 10. 10 provides the environment in which you can lay down your life.
You know, almost always be me with 10 people.
Yeah.
There can't exist 10 people, one of whom isn't in need at any given moment. God says the one in need is the most fortunate one. Can you see how your thoughts are so totally opposite from God most of the time? Now God knows that, so that's why there's 10. That's why there's the preaching of the cross. That's why through the foolishness of preaching, men are saved. What have we come against in the last few years? What have we preached against? What have we preached for? That's better yet. Is there anything that hasn't been come against? How about mothers?
Patriotism.
Fathers. Patriotism.
Michael Jackson.
Priests. I'm an American. Right?
Darn it.
Darn it.
Athletes.
Superstars.
People. A plan.
Good word.
Buddies.
Purple shoes.
I think it's time we get back to the serious study of the word here, folks. I will not destroy it for 10's sake. Do you have any idea how difficult it was for me to break up the Bible studies, to let teach some of the people that I disciple? You know how difficult that was for me?
Very. It's the only time I've seen you do something that was past the bound. You had almost past the boundary before you let them go on. So I knew it was extremely difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I hated it because, first of all, I don't trust Gary. I don't trust Larry. I don't trust John.
Or anybody.
Bloom. Yeah.
You wouldn't trust us either.
That's right.
That's true.
I'm sure you're going to get it wrong. I'm sure they're getting it wrong right now.
Mm-hmm. Even as we speak.
Even as we speak.
It makes you crazy, doesn't it?
Makes me crazy.
Plenty of wine cooler on
here. I don't want them to make my mistakes.
It's not like sending a kid off to school or something.
Hmm?
It's not like sending a kid off to college or something.
Yeah.
Screw up. Not get it right.
Always
do. Not do the right thing.
But for 10's sake, I will not destroy it. Go to Isaiah 1. The vision of Isaiah, the son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord hath spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. The ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib, or feed box. But Israel doth not know, my people doth not consider. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger, they are gone away backward. How'd they do that?
They thought about themselves.
They just went their own way. They went their own way. Did you hear that? They went their own way. That's all it means. All that stuff says they did their own thing. Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick. The whole heart faint. Now the whole heart faint means the heart's ready to quit at every juncture. How many times has Harry wanted to quit being a Levite?
Today. At least he said that. I didn't.
That's an honest guy.
From the sole of the foot even unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. Now, the rabbis say that these wounds and bruises and putrefying sores are the sores of leprosy, raw flesh being turned out. And leprosy is simply the spiritual condition of a grape that ferments inwardly. Leprosy is a disease of fermentation, but not fermentation bubbling forth as in wine, but it's like is the opposite of wine. It's an isolated single grape that ferments inwardly. You know what I mean? So the pieces where the skin is the weakest, it explodes out. Well, that's what God says your plans and your ambitions and your dreams are. They're leprosy. They are raw flesh. You understand that? All your concerns, your righteous concerns, are all leprosy. Your wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. Why? Because He has put 1,000 obstacles in your path, and yet you still never hear. You always determinedly and obstinately forge on ahead, insisting on your own divinity. You understand that? It's the opposite of submission. You can be very righteous and think, oh, I'm just... What you, in fact, you're doing is you're stiff-necked, hard-hearted, because you insist on your own divinity. Okay. Your country, you know, well, there's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores, they have not been closed or healed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Your country is desolate, your cities are burned with fire. He doesn't say will be, it says are. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. It is desolate as overthrown by strangers. The daughter of Zion is left as a cottage in a vineyard, as a lodge in a garden of cucumbers. You know what that means?
No.
A cottage in a vineyard is something that isn't supposed to be there. It's the idea that there would be a place to live inside of a vineyard.
Or a lodge in a garden of cucumbers.
Or that you would be living in other words, the field is not, I mean, you're not there for what it's supposed to be there for. You understand?
Yeah.
Like a fish with a bicycle.
Yeah. Or a bear with a bicycle, for your sake.
Hey, hey.
You know,
it's funny. I've just decided, that Isaiah 1:6 has always been that was the one that got me fired from the first radio job.
Did you say that?
You say? Holy,
and I had talked to him. He had really worked me up.
No, I got him the job. You got to forget.
Yeah, well, that's true. You did give me.
I got you the job.
And then you got me fired.
Nice.
He did get the job. I should add that. But anyway, so
you always leave that part out of that thought.
I never really do. But anyway, so I showed
up. First time I heard it.
And so. We had talked about, I told him some of the songs on the playlist. This was really, when I look back on this, some of the most fun I ever had on the radio. Anyway, I played Peace by Walt Mills, and then I read, "For I Came Not to Bring Peace, but the Sword." You know, and then I played Beautiful People by the Downings, and read Isaiah 1:6.
Was this a religious station?
Yeah. They fired
his
right.
First job.
Let you go. Yeah, they did. It was really kind of cool.
They left him. They fired him right on the air.
Right, they fired me on the air, but it was a way that they did it so Christian-like. They came in and they said, "We no longer have need for your services."
As he was talking in the microphone,
you know, it's like,
and it went out.
Exactly. I mean, it was like, I couldn't believe it. It was such a nice way to can somebody on the air.
What did they do? Just somebody else had to finish your shift?
Yeah, they just let the program director.
You right off the air.
That's hilarious. I can't believe they would do that with an open mic.
Well, they didn't do it. They played a song.
Yeah, they did.
They played a song while they were finally, they got rid of them.
Oh, but I thought you meant that went out on the air.
No. No, what we did is we took the playlist and then we went and all these great, nice Christian sound of smiley songs, smiley face goes, and I gave them the verses that said the opposite of what.
Right.
That said the opposite. And then I really pumped him up to go do it.
Yeah.
We didn't make it past 3 or 4 songs.
I can see it, right? They come in, they go, "Rick, play a song. Make a nice one."
It was really funny, though. "We no longer have need of your service."
And the daughter of Zion is left as a cottage in a vineyard and as a lodge in a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city. Except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a seed. Again, and I hate this in the King James, if you look it up. Except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a seed. A very small remnant isn't there. Except the Lord of hosts had left us a Zeruah. We should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like unto Gomorrah.
So that remnant is the ten.
The ten is the ten, yeah. But it's the seed, it's ten seeds. You understand?
Yeah.
Now hear ye the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. Who is he talking to? But he's talking to us at all times. Sodom and Gomorrah are a metaphor that go beyond and include and encompass all other metaphors. In other words, they include Egypt, they include Babylon, they include the flesh, they include everything. Do you understand? Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me? Etc., etc., etc. Okay, let's go to 1. Now let's go to chapter 3. For behold, the Lord of hosts doth take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole staff, and the whole stay of water, excuse me. The mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the prudent and the ancient, the captain of fifty and the honorable man and the counselor and the cunning artificer and the eloquent orator. Shut up. And I will give children to be their princes.
It was too easy.
It's like one of those lambs, right?
Yeah.
And the people shall be oppressed, you better believe it, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. The child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient, and the base against the honorable. When a man shall take hold of his brother of the house of his father, saying, Thou hast clothing, be thou our ruler, and let this ruin be under thy hand. You have any, you have this, you know, it's like in the land of the blind, a one-eyed man is king. In that day shall he swear, saying, I will not be a healer, for in my house is neither bread nor clothing. Make me not a ruler of the people, for Jerusalem is ruined, Judah is fallen. And remember, all this came to pass in AD 70. Because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord to provoke the eyes of his glory. The show of their countenance doth witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom, and hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. Now, you know that during the siege of Jerusalem, when the Romans came against Jerusalem during the wars of Titus, and when the temple was finally destroyed in AD 70, there was not one Christian left in the city. They had been warned by three visions on all the Christians left.
Wow, I never knew that.
I didn't know that either.
And they all, the leadership, went to Antioch.
Cool.
Not one Christian was destroyed.
So where's Antioch? Is that in Greece?
No, Antioch is just north of... It's in Syria now, in that little piece of where Syria comes out and hits the coastline before it becomes Lebanon and before after
so
it's Turkey.
Far.
No, they just went north. And the church at Antioch became the headquarters church for all Christianity. The bishop of Antioch was the highest that there could be. Peter was the bishop of Antioch for a while, and then this Ignatius, the one I told you about, replaced him later. But I'm saying all this to prepare you for what's going to be said about Sodom and Gomorrah and what's going to happen at Sodom and Gomorrah, so that you might hear it as a warning, so that you might see the incredible danger that you're in when you permit yourself to go on a trip. And you've got to see, hear this clearly. Epicurus said this first many, many hundreds of thousands of years ago. He said, it's not the circumstances that try the hearts of men. It's the judgments they make about the circumstances. Now, you are judging incorrectly when you judge about a circumstance to cause it to force you inward. That means you're not judging with righteous judgment, and if you go inward, you are as Sodom and made like unto Gomorrah. Again, remember, we are about a people that is waiting expectantly. Any second, the end may appear. If you are found inward at the time of the appearing, you will literally be as Sodom and Gomorrah. You understand that? Clearly understand it, if you understand nothing else, because the mark will be on your forehead that says that you have the whore's forehead, i.e. way of thinking, instead of the bride's way of thinking, the abandonment to the... Let's go to Ezekiel 9. Remember, Ezekiel 8 is going through, you find a hole in the wall and you dig, and then you look in the inner chamber and you look in all the chambers and find out what's going on, the abominations that are done in the temple. And then in 8:17 he said, then said he unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? It is a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the whoredoms which they commit here. For they have filled the land with violence and have returned to provoke me to anger, and lo, they put the branch to their nose. Therefore will I also deal in fury, mine eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, yet will I not hear. For our purposes tonight, the reason is because they've gone inward. God cannot hear you. You understand that? You really understand it. He cried also in mine ear with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over this city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north, and every man a slaughter weapon in his hand. And one man among them was clothed with linen, with a writer's inkhorn by his side. And they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. And the glory of the God of Israel was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was to the threshold of the house. And he called to the man clothed with linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And the Lord said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. Now the mark, the word is tau, and it's the mark of the cross. And to the others he said in mine hearing, go you after him through the city and smite. Let not your eye spare, neither have you pity. Slay utterly, old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark. Begin at my sanctuary. Then they begin at the ancient men which were before the house. And he said unto them, defile the house, fill the courts with the slain. Go you forth. And they went forth and slew in the city. And it came to pass while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face and cried and said, ah, Lord God, wilt thou destroy all the residue of Israel in thy pouring out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? Then said he unto me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great, and the land is full of blood, and the city full of perverseness. For they say, the Lord hath forsaken the earth, and the Lord seeth not. Now again, you understand? This is what you do when you go inward? You've got to hear this, folks, if you've never heard anything else. And as for me, also, mine eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense their way upon their head. And behold, the man clothed with linen, which had the inkhorn by his side, reported the manner, saying, I have done as thou hast commanded me. And the glory of the Lord departs the temple. Now,
this is all I thought about. Like, since the first time, well, not the first time, but I don't know, when you talked about it being a positional thing, you know, I mean, it seems like it's all I thought about.
It's know your position and forget about it. There's no merit in thinking about it. There's only merit in abandoning. Man, you drive yourself crazy thinking about this stuff. Except the Lord had left us a seed, we had been made as Sodom and made like unto Gomorrah. Toast. Post-toasties. That's enough for tonight.